House, please come to order. Members indicate your presence by voting. Madam Clerk.
29 members present.
We do have a quorum to conduct business. Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Let the record reflect, please, that Representative Foster has previously been excused from a call today. I move and ask unanimous consent that Representatives Curtula and Representative Lynn be excused from a call from now until 8 a.m. tomorrow. And I move and ask unanimous consent that the excused absence for Representative Gruenberg be extended to morning plain time Monday, February 4th.
Without objection, those members will be shown as excused. Leading the invocation this morning is Reverend Kenneth Torkel McLean of the Juno Unitarian Universalist Fellowship. Members, please rise for the invocation.
Out of the diversity of our backgrounds and traditions, let us gather in a spirit of prayer. Eternal God, may our prayers begin and end with gratitude, thankfulness for the abundance and beauty of our native land, appreciation for the men and women who have labored and struggled to build the institutions of a government defined by human dignity, equality, and justice. We give thanks for the power vested in this body to respond to human need, to protect the general welfare, and to preserve the blessings we have inherited. May its deliberations and decisions be remembered for their wisdom, compassion, and forbearance. Amen.
Amen. Representative Crawford, lead us in the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Representative Dahlstrom.
Mr. Speaker, I'd ask that beautiful prayer be spread across the journal.
Hearing no objection, then that prayer will be spread across the journal. Madam Clerk, could you certify the journal for the previous legislative days?
I certify the correctness of the journal for the 11th, 12th, and 13th days.
Majority Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move and ask unanimous consent that the journal of the previous days be approved as certified by the Chief Clerk.
Hearing no objection, then the journal as presented by the Chief Clerk will be certified. Are there guests for introduction this morning? Are there messages from the Governor?
There are no messages from the governor today, Mr. Speaker.
Are there messages from the other body?
And there are no messages from the other body.
Are there communications?
From the Department of Transportation and Public Facilities, the Alaska Marine Highway System Fund annual financial report. And there are no further communications.
Are there any standing committee reports?
There are no standing committee reports today.
Are there any special committee reports?
The House Special Committee on Fisheries has considered House Bill 321, Salmon Product Development Tax Credit, recommends it be replaced with Committee Substitute for House Bill 321, Fish with the same title, attaches a fiscal note, recommending due pass Wilson, Johansson, Edgman, Seaton, no recommendation Ledoux and Holmes. The report was signed by Representative Seaton, Chair, House Bill 321, as a further referral to the Finance Committee. There are no further reports of special committees.
Are there any resolutions or citations to be introduced?
Citation honoring Julie Kane Hill, Outstanding Teacher of the Year, by Representative Ledoux and Senator Stevens. Honoring Dottie Pinckney by Senator Olson. In memoriam Beth Sheen by Representative Guttenberg and Senator Thomas. In memoriam, Lieutenant Commander Robin Royce Starrett, United States Coast Guard, retired, by Representative Ledoux and Senator Stevens. House Concurrent Resolution Number 18 by Representatives Gardner and Kawasaki, proposing an amendment to the uniform rules of the Alaska State Legislature relating to voting.
Refer to State Affairs and Rules.
There are no further citations or resolutions for introduction.
Are there any bills for introduction?
House Bill 342 by Representatives Kawasaki, Crawford, Dugan, and Dahl, entitled An Act Relating to Open Meetings Guidelines for Legislative Bodies and Providing for an Effective Date.
State Affairs and the Rules Committee.
There are no further bills for introduction.
Brings us down to consideration of the daily calendar. Madam Clerk, would you please read the first item on today's agenda?
House Joint Resolution 25 by Representatives Harris, Grunberg, Guttenberg, Kurtula, Cisna, and Lynn, urging the United States Congress to support the freedom to choose unions. The State Affairs Committee considered the resolution, attached a zero fiscal note, recommending Dupas, Grunberg, Dahl, and Lynn, no recommendation, Johansson, amend Roses and Coghill. The report was signed by Representative Lynn Chair. The Rules Committee submitted an updated zero fiscal note. And I have one amendment.
Do we have to adopt a version or not?
There isn't a CS.
Okay. Who's the amendment by?
Amendment number one by Representative Coghill to page 2, lines 11 through 14.
Representative Coghill.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move amendment number one.
There is an objection. Representative Coghill.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Amendment number one, if you look on page 2, lines 11 through 14, this particular bill is asking us to ask Congress on dealing with the, the Employee Freedom of Choice Act of 2007. But the whereas on this page really couldn't reflect what I believe, and it certainly is inflammatory, I think, as a statement. The fact of millions of dollars spent to frustrate workers' efforts to form unions is equally true the other way, that millions of dollars are equally spent to frustrate those who don't want to unionize. So in some ways, I think it's a gratuitous statement. It's an opinion, and I just don't agree with the opinion, therefore I move that amendment.
Any other debate? Representative Crawford.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I can speak with some experience and authority on this matter because having had a job as a union organizer, I know that quite possibly millions and millions of dollars are spent each year on workers' efforts to organize. A number of times that I've been out on jobs where I've gotten a job at a non-union outfit and went in and explained to people what they could get, what they could acquire for themselves by organizing and bargaining collectively together. I've seen what the anti-union lawyer firms can do to frustrate the will of those workers to organize on their behalf. There are a number of ways that they do that through the loopholes that were brought about in the Taft-Hartley bill back in the late 40s. They can delay and stretch out the organizing process for years, while they're able to bring in each and every employee for what they call a hostage meeting, where you have nobody to help you or represent you, many times berate the and to scare those employees. I know. I've been fired a number of times for my union organizing activities. What happens is, I've been able to get back wages sometimes, but that was after the job was long since over, waiting on those you know, elections held by the NLRB. It's a huge loophole, the Taft-Hartley bill and the Employee Free Choice Act, as a way to right that wrong that was built into the law back in, I think, 1948. So this statement here, the whereas that's in question, I think is actually a statement of fact that millions of dollars are spent each year trying to frustrate the efforts of workers to unionize. Thank you.
Other debate? Representative Guttenberg.
The maker of the amendment has a good point, actually. He talked about the millions of dollars spent on the other side of the issue. Well, I think the difference is clear, and I think it's one of the basis of what we're trying to do here. One is money spent to try and get people to have the right to have a vote, and the other is the millions of dollars preventing people from having the right to vote. And I think in this body and in this nation, we want people to vote.
Other debate. Representative Kelly.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I rise I'm going to vote against the amendment only because I respect the process, but I've got problems from line 1, page 1, to line 9, page 3, and so I don't want to just take one little bite on the ear of an elephant here, and you probably prefer that I don't try to go through and change the whole thing. So I intend to vote against amendment number 1.
Other debate. You ready for the wrap-up? Ready for the question? Question is, shall amendment number 1 pass the House? Members, please vote. Madam Clerk, please lock the roll. Does any member wish to change his or her vote? Madam Clerk.
13 yeas, 22 nays.
So the vote of 13 yeas and 22 nays, amendment number 1 has failed to pass the House. Are there any other amendments, Madam Clerk?
I have no further amendments.
Briefings. Third reading.
Sorry.
I had to check, too. So.
I missed my cue.
Yeah.
Mr. Speaker, I move and ask unanimous consent that H.J.R. 25 be considered engrossed, advanced to third reading, and placed on final passage.
There are no objection. We're in third reading. Madam Clerk, would you please read the title for the third and final time?
House Joint Resolution 25, urging the United States Congress to support the freedom to choose unions.
Representative Crawford. I can't be in two places at once, so you have to take my spot.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, for the privilege to stand in for you this morning on your resolution that you've introduced. I do consider it an honor to be able to speak to this subject that, I like I said before on the amendment, that I do have some experience. It's been my life for about 30 years before I got to this body that I worked as a union iron worker and several of those years as a union organizer for that union. And, you know, I know that what I have today I owe to the people like my father and many others that fought for the rights that unions have been able to secure for workers in America through collective bargaining. They're responsible for a number of things, like the 40-hour work week and the weekend, minimum wage, workers' compensation, OSHA, job safety, pensions, health insurance, and unemployment insurance. All of those things we owe to those workers that came before us and fought for those issues. Also, those issues are under attack every day today. Back in the late 50s, the nation reached the highest concentration of union workers in the workforce, which was about 33%. Today, we're down to about 9% in the private workforce, and about with the added public employees, unions, and all, we're up at about 14% for the total nation's workforce. That's a prime reason why things like pensions and health insurance are under attack today. What this Employee Free Choice Act does is help correct some of those injustices, gives us the ability to actually organize and get a first contract. That's in the issue. Now, the U.S. House of Representatives voted on this, and it was an overwhelming victory, and it was on both sides of the aisle. I believe that it went to the U.S. Senate, and it takes 60 votes to get cloture on a filibuster. I believe they got 58 votes, and right, that's where it sits. I believe that our own delegation in the Senate voted against cloture, and this would be a good message to send to our senators to help them understand what it is that the majority of working people and people that care about the working people of Alaska would like to see happen. I'd be glad to sum up a little bit later.
Other debate? Representative Kelly.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I have some experience on the matter as well, but it doesn't quite play out just the same as my friend from Anchorage. And I believe that, I have problems with this all the way from the freedom of choice, the freedom to choose decision. In this time of things meaning the reverse from what they appear to mean, this is a classic example of it. And H.R. 800 is, in my opinion, an un-American way to proceed. And, yes, I also will make my feelings known to particularly our representative in the House, who seems to have it wrong. We now give workers the right to choose. They can choose the union or the non-union route. And I understand why unions are scrapping hard for this. In the time I've been observing the American scene, union membership has gone from 1 out of 4 employees, roughly, to somewhere near 12% now, I think the latest numbers are. And so a lot of the things that the unions fought for originally, they pushed hard, and government has that as a requirement now. Regardless of whether you think it's all good or not, that has been what has happened. So I would far prefer that the secret ballot, which is the right when we go to the voting booth, it's the thing we'd like people all around the world to have and to respect. And I don't want the company knowing how you vote, and I don't want the union knowing how you vote. And I feel very strongly that we should turn HJR 25 down. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Other debate? Representative Johansson.
Mr. Speaker, I just find it ironic that this is a message to our delegation dealing with cloture. These are the same people, I think, back east who used that same tool to stop opening the ANWR. And I just find it extremely ironic that we are asking our delegation to switch their votes to get over that same tool that's been used to hamper the development of our natural resources in Alaska. Thank you.
Other debate? Representative Guerra.
Thank you, Speaker. Since I've been here, I've heard some interesting statements about lawyers. Some of them have been true, but some of them haven't. When I was in law school, the way I could have made the most money would have been to go to work for one of the big corporate firms. And they all had a labor department. And I thought that was interesting. I'd like to work on labor issues. I'd like to help workers. And so I'd go into the interviews and I'd say, what does your labor department do? And of the big firms, the ones that pay $150,000 to students graduating law school on their first day of work, back when I was in law school, they were paying about $60,000 to $90,000 a day to people with no experience. I'd say, what do you do in your labor department? And they'd say, well, we prevent unions from organizing. We help employers stop unions from organizing. And what I learned was exactly what the speaker to my left said. The cheapest way to stop a union is to fire the people who work for the company who are pushing to organize it. See, we all think that everybody has a right to speak their mind, whether to form a union or not to form a union. And they changed federal law a number of years ago to say the only penalty an employer has to pay when they fire somebody who's trying to speak their mind and form a union, only penalty they have to pay is something like back wages or triple back wages or something. So you find the main organizers, you fire them, you stop the union drive, and then after it's all over, you pay a few $1,000s in penalties. That's what those firms do, Mr. Speaker. So, you know, there's a lot of talk out there that, you know, lawyers are there, that all they do is represent plaintiffs. Well, the lawyers that make the most money are the ones that represent the corporations. And what those labor departments do, Mr. Speaker, is something I never wanted to do as a lawyer myself, and I proudly decided not to work for any of those firms. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Other debate. Representative Thomas.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Probably being one of the few in here that have dealt with organized labor or trying to organize a Alaska Native corporations, companies, you know, we hear stories, horror stories of closing doors, firing people. We've never done that. Maybe we had better lawyers than the previous speaker spoke about, but from the start, we were told you cannot fire people who are trying to organize. We've never done that. We went through the closed-door process of the unions talking to the people and the people in our companies talking to people, let them vote. I like the quote in here, though. 58% of the people want to be in the unions. I was one of those one time. It was turned down, and it's interesting. And I brought it up in finance and got my behind chewed a little bit by a commissioner because I told him I didn't have a family member belonging to any unions that could get me in. But I'm going to vote. I'll vote for this, but I want people to know that not everybody, Mr. Speaker, treats people like people are trying to say they are. We've been fair and open. We are a minority-owned corporation, Alaska Native. And we couldn't even hire our own people. All we were trying to do is protect the right for us to hire our own shareholders versus an Okie from Muskogee or something, you know. So I will vote for this out of respect for the open process, but really don't like some of the words in this resolution. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Other debate. Representative Meyer.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, my staff did a little research on this to find out why this didn't pass in the U.S. Senate and why our delegation voted against it. And it's our understanding that they voted against it in the U.S. Senate because it takes away the individual's right to a secret ballot. And I think that is important. The union boss or the management shouldn't be there seeing how you vote. It should be done by secret ballot. So I don't see this as a pro or con union issue. It's just a process issue. And since the bill is already dead in the U.S. Senate, it seems kind of relevant to even be doing this resolution. Although the resolution is non-binding, so I guess it's all right. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Another debate, Representative Coghill.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. It seems marvelous to me that we're going to, on one hand, talk about the principle of free from coercion. Let me just paint a little picture here. How about your voting booth in your local precinct? We'll just take the booth down, and we'll have people come in, stand in a group, and they'll flash their voter card saying who they're going to vote for and see how coercion works in that arena. One of the reasons we put these booths up is to protect people's autonomy in having their right to vote free from coercion. And in this very resolution, we're saying we want them to be free from coercion, and yet they'll have to stand in a crowd waving a card up saying that they're going to vote a certain way. And I think that's absolutely counter to the freedom to choose whether you will or will not bargain. I am free. I am okay with people having the choice to bargain. But what we're doing is we're asking Congress to turn the tables and say, we will allow coercion in this voting process by you having to stand up publicly in a peer group and make your choice known by a card check. And I think that's absolutely the wrong thing to do. If people choose not to join a union, they should be equally free from that coercion. So, and this thing about having closed doors in the part that I was trying to take out, because it just seemed awkward to me. I've been on a little bit of both sides of the thing. I know that there's closed doors meeting on both sides of the issue. And for the people who say we're going to organize a union as if they did it all out in the front main room, I think we're kidding ourselves. And to think that a business sitting in a boardroom couldn't have that discussion equal to having the same discussion in a boardroom in the union, I think it's inflammatory. And so to me, there's two very strong principles that we're violating here, is we're asking Congress to do something that goes counter to what we demand in our voting procedures. That would be the primary one. The other is we're sending very inflammatory language, which I disagree with.
Other debate? Representative Boot.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I rise in support of your resolution, sir. Thank you very much for the opportunity to speak on this as someone who, with firsthand knowledge of such elections where there is absolute privacy, I can stand in support of this with absolute guarantees that people who would like to choose have the availability to do that. Over the course of the last several decades, that opportunity has been diminished. And that opportunity through this resolution is being reaffirmed. That's all this is. It is not a guarantee. It's not an affirmation. All it is saying that through the National Labor Relations Bill of 1935, you have an opportunity to raise the standard of living for your family through a living wage, through insurance, and through a retirement that gives you a dignified standard of living should you so choose. These are opportunities to choose. This is not coercion in any manner. However, I can state firsthand that I have seen where this opportunity has been diminished. And whereas some may interpret this as being inflammatory, I can tell you that the opportunity for working families in this country, and in this state in particular, has been diminished, and it should be restored. And thank you very much, sir, for giving me the opportunity to speak.
Any other debate? Representative Crawford, and wrap up.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. There were a number of points that were made, and one that I'd like to call attention to is a derogatory term that was used. It was one, union bosses. That's just one of those that I have to bring up. I hate that term because in a union, we are freely elected officials. It's the most democratic form of organization that I know of. We regularly replace our union officials. There's no way that you can call one of our officials a boss because they do get replaced so often. They are so close to their membership. So I take offense at that. Also, the term about coercion. You know, there's no way for a union organizer to coerce somebody to come to a closed-door meeting. We can't use the threat of a person's job. If they come to a meeting with a union organizer, it's a voluntary meeting. There's nothing that an organizer can do to say, you need to come to this meeting, you have to come to this meeting, your job is at stake if you don't come to this meeting, because that's not the case. But it is the case on the side of the employer. Mr. Speaker, this is about timeliness. Had we been able to have go through the process, do the card checks, and then get an immediate or a timely vote, an LRB vote on getting a union, and then had we been able, once we had a majority that voted for the union to get a contract, then this wouldn't be needed. The reason why people are working so hard to try to get this passed is because that hasn't been the case. They do delay. It takes years to get an NLRB election called. Many times after the building is built, the job's all over, all done and through. Of course, I've been able to get back wages for some of the jobs that I've been fired for my union organizing activities. But that was small potatoes when it was just me and just my wages when the whole job continued on without a contract, without health care, without pensions, without job security. So, Mr. Speaker, I think that this is a very, very good resolution, and I hope everybody finds it in their heart the ability to vote for it. Thank you.
Representative Gatto?
Yes.
That is. House, come back to order. Representative Coghill.
Speaker, before we vote, the question had come to me, and honestly don't know how to answer it, but I guess it's to each member to answer. I know there are several people that stand to gain significantly if they, because of their union standing, and Mr. Chairman, Mr. Speaker, I would only ask that we consider that. I don't know that this would actually stand to cause us any gain if we were unions, but I think it gets pretty close to that.
Well, I'll be the first to declare I have been a member of the Teamsters Union for almost 33 years, but I'm about ready to retire. So, but I do belong to a union, and I think there are several others if they wish to explain that as well. President Crawford.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I have retired as a union iron worker, and proudly so. So if that's a conflict for anybody, then, you know, have at it. Thanks.
Representative Guttenberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I am a retired member of the Laborers Union, and I believe that if this were to pass Congress, we would all have conflicts of interest because the members in all of our districts would be seeking a better life, and we'd be actually be getting it through wages and benefits. Thank you.
Just a conflict, that's it. Anybody else?
It would appear to me that if the union members need to declare a conflict, that people who are part of management perhaps should think about declaring it also.
All right, we're not getting into a debate about that. If that's an issue, we've done that. So, all right, you ready for the question? The question is, shall House Joint Resolution 25 pass the House? Members, please vote. President Guttenberg, you want to vote? Madam Clerk, please lock the roll. Does any member wish to change his or her vote? Madam Clerk.
21 yeas, 15 nays.
So the vote of 21 yeas and 15 nays, House Joint Resolution 25 has passed the House. Madam Clerk, are there any other items on today's agenda?
There's a citation on today's calendar.
Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move and ask unanimous consent the House to approve the citation on today's calendar.
No objection. The citation on today's calendar is approved. Is there any unfinished business? Any absentees? Anybody like that? Everything's okay. Is there any committee announcements? Are there any committee announcements? Representative Olson?
Commerce will meet at 3 p.m. in room 17, Transportation Committee Room.
Labor and Commerce. Any other committee announcements? Mr. Majority Leader?
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Legislative Budget and Audit will have a committee meeting in House Finance tomorrow at 9 a.m. We have a presentation by the federal co-chairman of the Denali Commission, George Kanellis, who will give a presentation and be able to answer any questions on the ins and outs of how they operate and what their future is.
Representative Thomas.
Mr. Speaker, Subcommittee for Finance and Transportation at 7 a.m. tomorrow.
Is that chaired by you or Representative Hawker?
I don't know.
Yes. Representative Gatto?
I'll try to make that one. Resources at 1, thank you.
Resources at 1. Representative Amherst? Judiciary at 1. Any other committee announcements? Representative Meyer?
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'm not sure if we have session tomorrow, so I'd like to announce that we are going to take up education funding tomorrow, finance at 1 o'clock.
We do not have session tomorrow. The session will be at Wednesday. But any other committee announcements? Any other announcements? Special orders. Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Permission to speak on the heart.
On the heart?
Yes.
Heart or heartless?
on the heart.
Never mind.
The Center for Disease Control and Prevention has just released their latest research and data showing that since 1999, the incidences of heart attacks and strokes have declined by about 25%. And part of that reason is because that the people's average cholesterol values and the rate of tobacco use is down. And that's the good news. However, we do have some very concerned people in the CDC because of the fact that there are some things that really pertain to women that are kind of outstanding and astonishing. First of all, the prevalence of obesity and diabetes is increasing in the United States, and that is one of the forerunners of many times some kind of heart disease or stroke. So it may surprise you to know that women die of heart attacks much more frequently than men do. And these diseases kill more women each year than the next five diseases put together. So for women, this is very discerning because of the fact that women don't realize that the signs and symptoms for heart disease are different than they are for men. And I think we all know the signs and symptoms for men, but not always for women. And so this Friday, February 1st, will be our fifth annual Wear Red Day, and it's proclaimed as such by our governor. And the American Heart Association, as part of their Go Red for Women movement, is encouraging everyone to wear red this Friday. So I would encourage you all to help inspire women to take charge of their heart health, and that because it is the leading death of disease for women, that please, everyone, you fellas, that have red ties or red shirts, I want you to wear them Friday. That would be great.
Early.
That would be great. And so anyway, please wear red on Friday to help promote and for women to take charge of their health and start preventing some of these heart attacks that are happening. Thank you.
Very good. Other special orders? Mr. Majority Leader.
Mr. Speaker, I move and ask unanimous consent that the House stand in adjournment until 10 a.m. Wednesday, January 30th.
That objection will be an adjournment until 10 a.m. Wednesday.